Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio. News.
The Czech Foreign Minister has called on Turkey to stop military operations in northern Syria. The public pay their last respects to deceased actress and Charter 77 signatory Vlasta Chramustová, and a state apology is not necessary regarding the president's false reference of writer Ferdinand Peroutka, court rules. The Czech Minister of Foreign Affairs, Tomáš Petříček, summoned the Turkish ambassador for a meeting on Monday to reiterate the European Union's priority of finding a diplomatic solution to the ongoing crisis in Syria and called on Turkey to halt its ongoing military operations in the region. An official statement posted on the ministry's website on Monday morning expressed particular concern over the violent death of the Kurdish politician Hevrin Khalaf on Saturday and those of many other civilians. The Czech Republic respects Turkey's right to defend its border, but strongly opposes the massive military intervention, the statement goes on to say. Later on Monday, the foreign minister said that he will propose to Prime Minister Andrej Babiš that the Czech Republic take part in an arms embargo issued by France and Germany on Turkey in retaliation for the latter's military invasion of northeast Syria. Leading representatives of the Czech cultural scene gathered at the National Theatre in Prague on Monday to attend an official farewell ceremony for actress and Charter 77 signatory Vlasta Chramustová, who died this month at the age of 92. The event, which featured a number of speakers, including her former colleagues from the National Theatre, culminated with a symbolic funeral procession exiting the building. Mrs. Chramustová was an accomplished actress before her refusal to accept the Soviet invasion of Czechoslovakia in 1968 led her to losing the opportunity to perform in film, television and radio. During the normalisation era, she was active in the country's dissent and signed the Charter 77 protest document. For her activities in the service of human rights and democracy, Ms. Chramustová was awarded the Order of Tomáš Garrigue Masaryk by President Václav Havel in 1998. The Ministry of Finance will not have to issue an apology on its website regarding Czech President Miloš Zeman's false statement that the acclaimed Czech writer Ferdinand Peroutka wrote an article entitled Hitler is a Gentleman during the 1930s. The Prague 1 District Court dismissed the lawsuit put forward by the writer's granddaughter Terezia Kaslova. According to the judge, the conditions for liability were not met because the president's public addresses are not governed by procedural regulations. Mrs. Kaslova originally sued the office of the president. However, despite the initial ruling going partially in her favour, the Supreme Court then ruled that she had directed her claim incorrectly. The dispute returned to the beginning, with the Ministry of Finance becoming the defendant. The international rating agency Moody's Investors Service has downgraded its outlook for the Czech banking sector from positive to stable. The change is mainly due to the slowdown in the country's economic growth, the Czech news agency reports. Moody's said on Monday that after years of rapid loan growth, it expects a slight deterioration in the quality of its loan portfolio in the Czech Republic. The New York-based bond credit rating business continues to see the country's credit rating as one of the best in Central and Eastern Europe, but it expects Czech GDP growth to decelerate from last year's 2.9% to 2.7% this year, with a further 0.2% decrease in 2020. The Czech doubles team of Barbora Krejčíková and Kateřina Siňáková has qualified for tennis's WTA finals in Shenzhen. It is the second time in a row that the pair have qualified for the prestigious season-ending tournament. They secured their place after winning the Linz doubles on Sunday, adding another title after their August victory in Toronto. They will join compatriot Barbora Strýcová, who will be lining up alongside Taiwanese partner Xie Xiu Wei at the WTA finals, which begin in 2 weeks' time. And when it comes to weather, the country's Indian summer is set to continue on Tuesday with sunny skies and temperatures hovering between 18 to 24 degrees Celsius. The warm spell is expected to end on Wednesday, when the average temperature will go down to 16 degrees and rains hit the northern and eastern parts of the country. My name is Tom McEncrow, and that is all the news for now.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio, with me, Ruth Franková. Coming up in today's program, the state does not have to apologize for President Zeman's false statement that the acclaimed Czech writer František Peroutka wrote an article entitled "Hitler is a Gentleman." The Czech Republic's footballers have greatly boosted their chances of reaching Euro 2020 after beating England in Prague. And later in the program, with Czech-China relations so often in the news in recent times, we speak to the country's top sinologist, Professor Olga Lomová. All that coming up, so please stay with us. In a speech at a Holocaust conference in 2015, President Miloš Zeman falsely claimed one of the nation's most respected journalists had penned a pre-war article titled "Hitler is a Gentleman." Ferdinand Peroutka, he claimed, was an admirer of the Nazi dictator. On Monday, a Prague court ruled against his granddaughter, who had sued for an apology. Brian Kennedy has the details.
In a ruling on Monday, which is not final, the Prague 1 District Court said that the claimant had failed to prove what specific legal norm relating to the performance of his public office President Zeman may have violated, and therefore one of the conditions for determining the state's liability was not fulfilled. It is not possible to slander the dead, but Terezia Kaslova wants to hold the president accountable for his false claims about her grandfather, Ferdinand Peroutka. He spent the entirety of the war interned in the Buchenwald concentration camp for refusing to abandon his democratic ideals. Ms. Kaslova told Radio Prague that she would continue the protracted legal battle to hold President Zeman accountable for his words.
To rozhodnutí dnešní mě
Today's court ruling saddens me greatly. To find that 30 years after the so-called Velvet Revolution, the president of our country can spew nonsense and lie without consequences, that thanks to a legal loophole, he doesn't have to apologize.
The Nazis had offered to release her grandfather from Buchenwald if he would agree to head a magazine he had founded that the regime had since turned into a propagandist outlet. He refused and spent 5 years in the concentration camp. After liberation came, he denounced vigilantism against ethnic Germans and alleged collaborators. Following the 1948 communist coup, Peroutka fled the country and went on to lead Radio Free Europe's Czech service and write a democratic manifesto. Today, annual awards to outstanding Czech journalists are given out in his name. Many of Terezia Kaslova's extended family died in the Holocaust, a fact she said makes the president's characterization of her grandfather and refusal to apologize all the more painful.
Of course, this is another reason why it is so insulting to me personally, apart from being sad to have my grandfather's name abused.
Why President Zeman targeted Peroutka in the first place has been the subject of much speculation now for years. Is he stubbornly proud? Does he simply relish controversy? Or does he perhaps have some ulterior motive for tarnishing the famed journalist's reputation? Whatever the case, the historical facts are now clear. Not only did Peroutka not write the "Hitler is a Gentleman" article, the piece, published by a communist newspaper in February 1937, was highly critical of the dictator. It was apparently written in reaction to a story in a right-wing daily that quoted Czech legionnaires describing Hitler as an affable fellow who the ex-soldiers doubted wanted to go to war. 3 years ago, the court ruled in favor of Peroutka's granddaughter, who sought a published apology from Zeman. At the time, the article had not yet been found, and he directed the office of the president to file an appellate complaint. The Supreme Court ruled that Zeman's words were not the responsibility of the office of the president, but of the Ministry of Finance, since even the Czech head of state is a civil servant. Zeman, at his request, then became a secondary party to the dispute, and Terezia Kaslova was obliged to sue the Czech state for maladministration. Her lawyer, František Vyskočil, told Czech radio that the court had failed to explain its decision.
The court offered no reasoning for reversing the earlier ruling. Neither did it explain why it had not ruled as in a similar case from this May when requiring President Zeman to apologize for having lied about a former advisor having been sacked for incompetence. No explanation as to why the court ruled differently in our case was given.
Franciszek Viscocio says that if the courts ultimately dismiss the suit, it would mean the president can insult whoever he likes with impunity.
Brian Kennedy with that report. The Czech Republic's footballers have greatly boosted their chances of reaching Euro 2020 after beating England 2-1 in Prague. Friday night's game was a genuine fairy tale for Zdeněk Ondrášek, who at the age of 30 scored on his debut to claim victory. For his part, England's Harry Maguire described the strike as a sucker punch, admitting his side hadn't deserved to take an early lead. Ian Willoughby has the details.
There were loud cheers around Prague's Cinobo Stadium at the final whistle on Friday night, after the Czech Republic had come from a goal down to beat a star-studded England 2-1. The hosts had gone ahead on 84 minutes through an unlikely hero, substitute Zdeněk Ondrášek. Aged 30, he plays for FC Dallas in the MLS and found the net with his first shot in his first ever appearance for the Czech Republic.
My dad had tears in his eyes for I think the first time in his life, and my mum was also delighted. I'm really happy, but still, I don't think it has hit me yet. I scored against England, and we won. It's incredible, and it's been an incredible night. But let's keep our feet on the ground. It's just one game. I'm really delighted, but one game doesn't make a career.
The result leaves the Czechs on the same points as England with two games to go, though England possess a game in hand. Czech trainer Jaroslav Šilhavý was justifiably proud of his charges' display. They were unruffled when Harry Kane converted a penalty after just 5 minutes and equalised only 4 minutes later through Jakub Brabec.
Our performance was great. We didn't park the bus, but played actively. We succeeded in putting a team as good as England under pressure. In the first half in particular, they didn't get into the game at all. Apart from the penalty, they had virtually nothing. I guess they didn't expect it after the game we played in London.
The Czechs had suffered a 5-0 drubbing in the reverse fixture at Wembley in March. England defender Harry Maguire said on Friday that the earlier result hadn't been an accurate reflection of the Czechs' qualities. But most of all, he was left to rue his own side's shortcomings.
We took the lead in the game, but we didn't deserve to. And then we changed it around at half-time. I think the second half we looked a lot more comfortable in the shape, and I can't recall them causing us too many problems in the second half, and we controlled the game, and then we get sucker punched at the end with the goal where probably we're looking likely like the team, having missed one or two really good chances, probably looking like the team where we are going on to win it. Maybe we need to improve our game management and make sure that we don't give away sloppy goals.
England manager Gareth Southgate wasn't offering any excuses either.
We didn't play well enough, simple as that. We conceded possession of the ball too cheaply. Particularly in the first half, we didn't create enough chances. Second half, we had some good chances that we didn't take. And throughout the night, we were too open out of possession. Some of that was because of giving the ball away. So we gave the Czechs, who played well, got to give them credit. We gave them too many opportunities to score.
The Czech Republic's next game is at home to Kosovo on November 14th. And their campaign concludes away to Bulgaria 3 days later.
Ian Willoughby with that report. Just a reminder that you are listening to Radio Prague International. Last week, Beijing grabbed the headlines here after ending a sister city agreement with Prague. But this is just the latest of a long line of news stories focused on the relationship between China and the Czech Republic, a topic Ian Willoughby discussed with Professor Olga Lomová for this edition of One on One.
Czech-Chinese relations have been in the news a lot recently. but how have they really developed over the decades? And how should we view Chinese moves to develop so-called digital totalitarianism, involving facial recognition and social credit? I discuss those issues with Professor Olga Lomova, head of the Department of Sinology at Charles University's Faculty of Arts. But I first asked the country's leading sinologist what had led her to the field.
Well, I studied the subject many, many years ago during the previous regime, and I really didn't like living in the, let's say, intellectual environment imposed on us by the system, and I wanted to do something very far away from this reality, and I really liked Chinese poetry as I read it in translations. I liked Chinese paintings, Chinese calligraphy. So I thought I would study something beautiful and far away from this world. And of course, when I started to study the subject, I came across the simple fact that China was enemy number one in socialist Czechoslovakia, because we were in the Soviet camp and China was anti-Soviet. This is the famous story going back to late 1950s and mainly 1960s. And I ended up basically studying the language of Chinese newspapers, Marxism, Leninism, and the criticism of Maoist thought from the perspective of Marxism, Leninism. So this is my education in the university. But I, of course, still kept my dream and was pursuing my study and research in other directions on my own. But this is the beginning of my sinological career, let's say.
As a student, did you have any chance to visit China, or did you have any real sense of what it was like there?
No, I had no opportunity to travel to China. It came only in the last year of my master program, just by coincidence, and I was sent there as an interpreter to the embassy. But I had an idea what China looks like, and I didn't like it because it was even darker than the world we lived in.
I'm curious about one thing. When the Tiananmen Square massacre happened in June 1989, how did that news reach the Czech community of sinological experts?
You know, we didn't have basically much coverage in the media. Actually, I remember the first real appearance of the events on Czech TV was after the crackdown, when students were being captured by the police and they were pictured, a very short, I still remember, very short scene of students with their heads pushed down by the police and brought to the court. And I remember I nearly wept because it was so violent and humiliating. We did have information from Western media, which we somehow could get access to. But there were no Tiananmen tanks and the emblematic picture of the tank man, nothing like that. And then there was a short message from our government in the newspapers praising Chinese authorities that they did a decisive blow to the counter-revolution.
After the Velvet Revolution in the 1990s, how were relations between the new Czech Republic and China?
There are several aspects of this which are usually forgotten. We are one of the first countries. I mean, Czechoslovakia was one of the first countries in the world that acknowledged People's Republic of China 70 years ago. I think 3 days after the announcement, and people should remember there were many countries in the West that didn't recognize People's Republic of China for many years. We established very good relationship in 1950s, which then deteriorated due to the inner clashes within the communist camp. But despite all the clashes, conflicts, animosities, the agreements which were concluded in the beginning of the People's Republic of China, they remained valid. So in 1990s, the agreements were valid. Already in mid-1980s, there were some attempts on both sides to reconciliate. So this continued.
But I'm sure the Beijing authorities didn't appreciate Václav Havel and his support for Tibet.
Well, this is very interesting. Chinese authorities very much wanted to invite Václav Havel for a state visit to China. I don't know the details, of course, but I remember I was told there were repeated attempts to invite him for a state visit, which he conditioned his visit to China by visiting not only the capital, Peking, but also Taipei and Lhasa. And, of course, something like that could not be accepted by the Chinese authorities. I have to stress, this is what I heard. Maybe it's a legend, I don't know. But this is something which I heard back in 1990s.
About 5 years ago, the then Czech Minister of Foreign Affairs, Lubomír Zaharálek, announced that the Czech Republic was going to reset relations with China and to foster closer ties. 5 years later, how do you think that resetting has gone, or how has it worked out for the Czech Republic?
Well, in principle, the whole word reset is wrong. There was nothing to be reset. There were valid agreements, and these agreements could be fulfilled by collaboration. There was nothing to reset. The only thing that was reset was an attempt to get rid of the human rights as a priority of our international policy.
But that's a very important thing, the Czech Republic dropping its previous insistence on human rights as a priority.
I was referring to the word reset. The relationship existed. There was no need, for example, to conclude new agreements. The only reset was targeting actually our internal decision of having human rights as our priority in international relations. Eventually, the ministry could not get rid of the human rights as our signature and also as part of our identity, I would say. Post-Velvet Revolution identity is totally based on human rights. I think it was a temporary attempt, very badly planned, and eventually nothing came out of it, I would say.
But surely there is now today warmer relations between the Czech Republic and China, especially given President Miloš Zeman, who I think has been to Beijing 5 times, and he's really pushed closer ties.
I think this is a misconception, because the regular exchanges, be them economic, cultural, education, they are still more or less the same. Yes, recently the Chinese sent many, many delegations, but these basically don't change anything. This is like traveling to Prague, and I don't know actually why, and sometimes I think it's just to have fun for government money. There are also much more stipends for Czech students. But the real substantial work doesn't change. The reset really didn't bring anything substantial. As for President Zeman, he is visible. He can pretend to represent Czech foreign policy, but Czech foreign policy is decided by Czech government, and this is just a show for the Chinese for reasons not quite clear to me.
Why do you think China itself is so keen to get greater footholds in European countries, to make investments, to kind of spread itself about more than in the past?
Well, I think it's part of its global strategy. It started already since the beginning of the 21st century, but it is very prominent since Xi Jinping came to power in 2012. China has really global ambition, and to achieve this global ambition, power ambition, political ambition, and of course economic ambition, and sometimes even cultural ambition, at least if you read the speeches of Secretary General Xi Jinping, is to get established itself in Europe. And Czech Republic is one of the small places, of many other places, which eventually could be the places where China could get hold of these places and make them their basis for further spreading its impact or fulfilling its ambition, I would say, its global ambition.
Given the perception, at least, that there are closer ties in the last few years, have you found there's been an increase in the number of students or would-be students applying to study Chinese for financial reasons or economic reasons?
Well, actually, the number of students is declining, and it's a general trend not only in our country, all over Europe. And I think it shows how China's soft power failed. And this is again related to the political system. Even though China spends incredible amounts of money, I've saw statistics and something like 10 times as much as the United States for presenting itself abroad and spreading its soft power. Its soft power simply does not get hold in the hearts of young people who want to study something interesting, inspiring, and even though they eventually may end up doing business or other very practical things, when they are students, they have aspirations and romantic visions that they want to realize during their study. And I think this is the basic reason why China is less and less popular among students applying to study something in the university.
China is famously or infamously developing facial recognition technology, also the system of social credit. It seems like it's creating a new kind of totalitarian state, like something we've never seen before. How do you respond to that?
Well, I can add one more information. Recently I learned from my student that in Chinese universities, in the classrooms, you have cameras, and during the classes, everything is recorded. What the teacher says, what the student says. There are openly published articles because apparently the authorities don't see anything wrong about it. Like in a kindergarten or in the basic school, very, very young kids, during the classes, again, they are recorded, and schools are proud about being able to use these technologies to follow any movement in the class, including the signals of students being not concentrated, not responding in the best way how a good student should respond, and then finding solutions to this. I think it's absolutely crazy. I think there will be many people who would be just crazy. You know, I wouldn't say it's a totally new system. I think it is a well-known system. We know from Stalinist Soviet Union, and we lived in it in a much milder version during the so-called normalization. The only problem is that it is put to perfection with the help of modern technologies, and this is really frightening. I don't want it.
My final question is, looking to the future, can you imagine a day when China won't be ruled by the Communist Party?
This is very hard to reply. My personal conviction is that the system is inhuman and unnatural. Inhuman in the sense that it doesn't conform to human nature. And if the system is like that, it cannot simply exist forever. Moreover, the recent very strict regulations, new laws, and much more tightening of the regime suggests that the regime itself is not very secure, doesn't feel itself very secure. If people really loved the Communist Party, and maybe we should stress the group of people who rule of China, because the word communist may be misleading for some people, they wouldn't have to be controlled in such a manner. So these indications suggest that, yes, people in China will also live normal lives. But sometimes I am afraid that due to our misunderstanding, I mean our in the West, our misconceptions, China may successfully export many of its system and may eventually contribute to our own enslavement, I would say. I think we have to discuss these things, and we have to be absolutely open and clear about what's going on in China. We should not be led by our own disappointment with many things in our current life. And I don't say we live in perfect world. We should not be led to thinking that Chinese system or Chinese collaboration with China is an option to solving our current problems. Collaboration or getting closer ties with China can only make our situation even worse.
Professor Olga Lomová speaking to Ian Willoughby. Apologies for the sound quality at some moments. The interview had to be recorded in less than ideal circumstances. If you have any comments about today's program, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. But that's all for now from me, Ruth Franíková. Thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.